The Israeli regime intensifies its indiscriminate strikes across the Gaza Strip, hitting more schools, hospitals, and other civilian infrastructure. Palestinian rights organizations say Israel's forced displacement of Gaza's residents raises concerns over a potential new Nakba, or catastrophe, in the besieged territory. And Iran's leader urges a global alliance to counter Western plots and address major world issues. Now, we'll begin this bulletin with Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. More people are falling victim to the regime's deadly onslaught, which was launched against besieged Palestinian territory nearly 2 months ago. Dozens of people were killed in the latest strikes targeting civilian infrastructure such as schools. The regime's army also continues to carry out attacks against hospitals full of patients where displaced Palestinians are seeking shelter. The health ministry in Gaza says hospitals have been flooded with an influx of dead bodies. Only a few medical facilities in Gaza are now functional amid the regime's indiscriminate bombing campaign.
Several ambulances from southern and central Gaza headed to Kamal Adwan Hospital to evacuate many injured civilians, as the hospital can no longer provide the necessary medical care. The ambulances were blocked by the Israeli troops in Salah Ad-Din area, and 4 medics were arrested. In addition, 8 medical crews were previously arrested, despite prior coordination, raising the number of medical crews arrested by the Israeli occupation to 12 medics. The arrest came when the crew members carried out their duties, thus blatantly violating international laws. However, the ambulances made their way to Kamal Adwan Hospital to evacuate several injuries to southern Gaza because the hospital was out of service due to the continuous Israeli attacks.
We live in a rented apartment in a residential building. The house next door was bombed and we were hit by the shrapnel. My daughter is in a serious condition and suffers from bleeding. She has been in the ICU for 3 days and survives on a breathing apparatus. She is in a critical condition, as you see. She does not speak or hear.
In addition to the intensified airstrikes, Israel sent dozens of tanks into the southern part of the territory as part of its expanding operations there. Israeli army has told the World Health Organization to empty an aid warehouse in southern Gaza before ground operations in the area make it unusable. Now, that's according to the WHO chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Main telecom company in Gaza also announced that mobile telephone services and internet connections have been cut. Israel resumed its war on Gaza on Friday after a 7-day truce. Regimes killed nearly 16,000 Palestinians since October 7th. More than half of Gaza's homes have been destroyed, leading to the displacement of over 80% of the territory's population. International reactions continue to pour in over Israel's war on Gaza, which has left a trail of death and destruction in the Palestinian territory. The UN Secretary General has described Gaza's humanitarian situation as catastrophic. Antonio Guterres called on the regime to avoid exacerbating things further. He said civilians, health workers, and journalists must be protected from Israeli attacks. The UN chief reiterated his call for a sustained humanitarian ceasefire. The UN chief for humanitarian affairs also slammed Israel's strikes on Gaza, urging the regime to stop what he called blatant disregard for basic humanity. Martin Griffiths said Gazans have been subjected to an apocalyptic situation. The Turkish president also condemned Israel's brutality in Gaza.
Holding Israeli leaders accountable for their war crimes is one of them. The UN Human Rights Council and the International Criminal Court must be considered in this context. Likewise, we will not allow the issue of nuclear weapons, the existence of which Israel admits, to be forgotten. Does Israel have atomic bombs? They do, but if you ask, they say no. We know very well what this is, and Netanyahu, who is currently the butcher of Gaza, will definitely be judged as the butcher of Gaza, just as Milosevic was judged beyond being a war criminal.
Erdogan also called for a very clear stance against what he called Israel's policy of dehumanization of Gaza. Meanwhile, three Palestinian human rights organizations warn about repercussions of Israel's escalation of forced displacement of Gazans. They raise concerns over potential new Nakba for Palestinians. Nakba, or catastrophe, refers to the ethnic cleansing of Palestine by Israel in 1948. President of the International Committee of the Red Cross has called for protection of civilians in Gaza from Israeli strikes. Mayor Janos Bolgerich also criticized what she called the international community's moral failure. Here she is.
We have to find solutions to this. We can't turn away from what is evidently a moral failure in the face of the international community. I've just visited the European Gaza Hospital, and the things I saw there is beyond anything that anyone should be in a position to describe. What shocked me the most were the children with atrocious injuries and at the same time having lost their parents with no one looking after them. I met people who have lost limbs because they needed to evacuate between treatments, and they lost a hand or a foot because they couldn't be treated in the hospital where they arrived first. I was told today that the north has lost its entire surgical capacity. We are facing a situation here that will not be healed by sending in more trucks. We need to provide protection to the civilians in Gaza, to the women and children, to the elderly people that I saw today that have nowhere to go.
Hamas says it's targeted different parts of the occupied territories in response to Israeli genocide of Gazans. Sounds of explosions could be heard in some neighborhoods of the Israeli capital following a barrage of rocket fire from Gaza. Military wing of Hamas says sirens were heard after it launched missiles targeting the Israeli city of Ashkelon. There's no immediate report of casualties. The Al-Qassam brigades also attacked the Nirim region in northwestern Negev with missiles. Resistance fighters say they have partially or completely destroyed 28 Israeli armored vehicles in Gaza over the past day. Also, an Israeli tank advancing into Beit Lahia from the east came under Al-Qassam fire. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution stressed the importance of forming an alliance among those countries standing against U.S. bullying. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei is of the opinion such an alliance could play a significant role in addressing crucial global issues, including long-standing issue of Palestine. The leader also touched upon 75-year history of suffering and torture endured by Palestinians. He said Israeli crimes have gotten too exposed to be concealed any longer. Leader made the remarks during a meeting with a visiting Cuban president in Tehran. Miguel Diaz-Canel underscored the high potential between Havana and Tehran for cooperation, particularly in dealing with the West's interventionist measures. He also criticized the international community for turning a blind eye to what he called unacceptable genocide taking place in Gaza. Iran categorically dismisses allegations leveled against it by Israel, saying they're aimed at covering up for the regime's crimes and violations of international law. In separate letters to the UN chief and president of the Security Council, Iran's ambassador said Tel Aviv is trying to evade accountability for its documented war crimes and genocide in Gaza. Amir Said Iravani said Israeli allegations lack any legal basis and are ironic coming from an apartheid and occupying regime. In recent letters to the UN, Israel accused Iran of playing a destructive role in the region and violating UN Security Council Resolution 2231, which endorses the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. And Israeli forces have launched yet another deadly raid into the occupied West Bank, killing a number of Palestinians, Mona Candiel reports.
Just in less than an hour ago, the Israeli forces retreated from the refugee camp of Qalandia Northern Al-Quds and the Kufr Aqab town Northern Al-Quds after an operation that lasted for almost 3 hours. During this operation, Israeli forces shot and killed yet another young Palestinian man, 32-year-old Ali Alqam from the refugee camp of Qalandia, was shot dead, according to Palestinian paramedics. He was shot in the heart. Earlier, Israeli forces had raided Qalqilia, northern the occupied West Bank. This time, an undercover unit raided Qalqilia. This means Israeli forces, disguised as Arabs or Palestinians, they raided the Qalqilia city with Palestinian vehicles or vehicles with Palestinian license, and then they ambushed a car where Palestinians had been inside. They opened fire at the car and they killed two Palestinians.
The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has launched fresh retaliatory attacks against Israeli positions along the Lebanese border, as Mariam Saleh reports.
Today, Hezbollah had intensified its resistance operations. We're talking about at least 9 operations that were launched against the Israelis. One of them, which is very significant, in the barracks of Granit, where they targeted a gathering of soldiers. And that is just one of the many instances. But the most significant that occurred this week was the targeting of a vehicle, a military vehicle, just yesterday in Beit Hillel. That was where the Israeli media seemed to have leaked or been able to get information that there is at least 11 Israeli soldiers between killed and wounded. And we're talking about really severe cases. That led to the fact that the Israelis were frustrated. There was shelling that was haphazard, very unsystematic everywhere, all over the outskirts in the southern area. Of course, we do not have, thank goodness, any casualties, any human casualties. The Israelis seem to still be very much careful not to cross the red lines of the resistance in Lebanon, since they have clearly said that once they target areas where there are civilians beyond that border area, then therefore Hezbollah will retaliate using harsher weapons. And we did see the use of Katyusha rockets. We did see the use of the Burkan rocket, which are heavier than the other missiles they are using against the posts directly. The Israelis, of course, are using illegitimate weapons. We're talking about the white phosphorus bombs. We're talking about several other types of bombs, in addition to the fact that they use a drone bomb that have been used to target the journalists recently. Also, two journalists were killed as a result of the drone. So basically, they are using it for the sake of assassination. They also used drone bombs in order to assassinate a member of the Al-Aqsa Brigades.
As the Israeli regime continues its bloodshed in Gaza, a number of international organizations have filed lawsuit against the Netherlands for supplying Israel with military aid. The Dutch branches of Amnesty International and UK-based Committee for Famine Relief have brought the case to The Hague. They condemned the Netherlands for exporting F-35 fighter jet parts to Israel amid what they called its ugly war on Gaza.
We demand from the state in this lawsuit is that it stops exporting parts for the fighter jets to Israel, and thereby enabling Israel to commit the crimes that it's currently committing in Gaza. We shouldn't be complicit in this ugly war, and we should take our responsibility under human rights standards, as we always say that we do, but then when it comes to the real situation, we don't, and we find that our business case with the United States for this F-35 is more important than abiding by human rights standards.
Oxfam representative says that there's evidence that the spare parts for the fighter jet sent by the Netherlands are used by Israel for intelligence and bombing Gaza. Several international organizations have slammed Israel's brutal attacks as genocide, urging the regime officials be brought to the International Criminal Court. They've also condemned countries supporting the regime's onslaught. Meanwhile, the Gaza Health Ministry has announced that the death toll from Israel's carnage in Gaza stands at nearly 16,000, mostly women and children. Yemen's armed forces say they've targeted two Israeli ships in the Red Sea in response to the regime's war crimes in Gaza.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces, with the help of Allah Almighty, carried out this morning a targeting operation against two Israeli ships in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. The targeted ships were the Unity Explorer and ship number 9. The first ship was targeted with a naval missile and the second ship was targeted with a naval drone. The targeting operation came after the two ships ignored warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Sari added, Yemen's army will continue to block movement of Israeli ships in the Red and Arabian Seas until the regime stops its aggression against Palestinians. He also warned those who cooperate with Israeli ships will also be legitimate targets. Meanwhile, the Pentagon also reported attacks on an American warship and multiple commercial vessels in the Red Sea by drones. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me. The child killer Zionist regime again bombed another Gaza hospital.
Oh, poor Palestinian children. All these crimes against women and children in Gaza just took me to decades ago when the Ba'athist regime of Saddam, with the help of Western regimes, imposed an 8-year war on Iran. But we resisted and emerged victorious without giving an inch of our soil to the enemy. And for Palestinians, of course, resistance is the answer. May God help them. I was wondering if I could visit the National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense for today. Yes, why not? Iran National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense is one of the most modern museums in the West Asia region, where you will be traveling in time to almost half a century ago and witness the dramatic and remarkable events that finally came to determine not only the history and destiny of Iran, but also that of the region. The story began by Iran's Islamic Revolution, to be followed by an 8-year heroic defense known as Holy Defense against the Ba'athist regime of Saddam and the Western partners in crime. The museum, on a landscape site of about 25 hectares in north central Tehran, is a gigantic war memorial with its collections concentrated heavily on the 1980 to 1988 U.S.-backed Iraqi-imposed war on Iran. What makes the museum stand out among its rivals is its effective use of multimedia tools to bring to life a glorious past that the nation will always take pride in. The National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense includes 8 halls, including a section as the Memorial of Holy Defense, where the concepts of Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense are reflected through digital technologies. Through the use of visual and conceptual media, these halls display the chronology of developments in Iran and present a totally new definition of the concept of museums. Subway for a ride to Shahid Hemat Highway, where I can get to the National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense. In this museum, I'll get familiar with the narratives of Iranian heroes, with the military equipment of those days. I mean, during the Holy Defense era, and with the martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the security of the people.
Shahid Hemat Station.
Oh, here I have to get off the train. I'm now inside the National Museum of the Islamic Revolution and Holy Defense. I'm in a hall which is called Butterflies Hall. Oh, it's impressive. The Hall of Butterflies greets you on arrival. This hall is dedicated to martyrs and victims of the war. Oh, it is filled with personal belongings found on the battlefield. Oh my God, the projection mapping in this hall is unique. I wish you were here to see it yourself. Projection mapping is a projection technique used to turn objects and elements into display surface for video projection, as if they are real. And now I am in a hall which its walls are covered with martyrs' photos of the 8-year imposed war. Look at them. Oh, most of them are young. God bless their souls. To maximize the utilization of the information and resources, audio commentary in Farsi, English, and Arabic is provided in every hall. Projection mapping video walls, photo montages, sound effects, and even temperature adjusters have been employed to take the visitors back to the actual times of the war. This museum is so huge that it takes much time to visit every corner of it. I came out for some fresh air and then I'll get back to the museum to discover more about the story of resistance days of Iran. You can also take a close look at the tanks and missile launchers outside the museum's building. I really appreciate the dynamic design of this museum. I also appreciate the determination and resolve of my nation's youths at a time when we were not as fully equipped as we are today, but we
resisted against the entire West and didn't give an inch of our soil to the enemy.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, let us ponder on an aphorism from the commander of the faithful and the leader of the pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Incapability is a catastrophe, endurance is bravery. Abstinence is riches, self-restraint is a shield against sin, and the best companion is submission to Allah's will.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, patience and belief. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. At times we feel that having patience is a good quality, but we can be just fine without even having this quality. Well, not really. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, the fourth divinely appointed Imam, the immaculate and infallible Imam, has said, "The relation between patience and belief is like the relation between the head and the body. There is no belief for him who has no patience." Well, this means without sabr, without patience, iman is non-existent. This is a serious issue. We cannot be just fine if we are not carrying the trait of patience in our personality. Probably the reason is that if someone lacks patience, steadfastness, resilience, resistance, and strength to uphold their belief and perform actions based on that belief will also be lost ultimately. They will not be able to uphold that belief, right? Because it requires a certain level of patience and certain level of strength and certain level of resistance to be able to keep that belief of yours. So sometimes, you know, for those who are not the patient ones, who don't have the quality of sabr, they, even if they have a good belief, over the course of time, amongst and in the midst of so many things happening around them, they seem to lose that faith and iman. It becomes weak for them. So it is of utmost importance for us to have the trait of patience. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing patience and iman, or belief. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam has said, I have patience with this boy of mine and with my household with a complete tolerance. Indeed, he who is patient will have the reward of him who prays all the night and observes fasting on day, and the position of a martyr who has fought along with the prophet. This is serious, brothers and sisters. If we don't have the trait of patience, we lose out on all these potential opportunities that Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, the fifth immaculate and infallible Imam, the divinely appointed Imam, has laid out for us. That is, to have the reward of somebody who fasts all day long and every day, and for someone who prays at the night, you know, the night prayers, right? That reward of a martyr, all of that is dependent on how patient we are, how much steadfastness and resilience and resistance do we have in our personality. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth divinely appointed Imam, has said, the relation between patience and belief is like the relation between head and the body. There cannot be any belief without patience, in the same way that there cannot be a living body without head. Now, what can be more explicit than this? Patience seemed to be, from these traditions of Ahlul Bayt, the prerequisite and the foundation on which the building of Iman and faith stands. So patience is something that is a mandatory for every believer to have in their personality.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Palestinian prisoners.
Part 2.
The Fourth Geneva Convention forbids the transfer of detainees outside the occupied territory. Article 76 states that all protected persons accused of an offence must be detained within the occupied country. And if they are sentenced, they have to serve the sentence within it. Gaza has been called the largest prison camp in the world, constantly under threat and attack by the Israelis. I was tipped off that Israel was planning to shell the tunnels. Our plans had to change dramatically. Because we had no legal entry visa from Egypt. We were told if we wanted to leave, we had to make a move earlier than planned. An attack was anticipated, so it was a big risk to enter the tunnel. There was no other way, though. We had no choice. We entered the tunnels again. Gaza has been under siege since 2007. Israel forbids Gazans to travel to the rest of Palestine. And access to the rest of the world via Egypt remains difficult to impossible. The people are trapped. It is not easy returning to a family that has had to survive without you for years or decades. Atta Falana was in prison for 19 years. His health deteriorated every day. He has completely missed his children growing up. Those injured during their arrest are often forced to remain in blood-soiled clothing for several months. Individuals who were detained in their nightclothes or underwear do not receive a change of clothing. According to many sources, some 1,000 Palestinian prisoners suffer from chronic ailments. The number of affected inmates continues to rise as a result of medical negligence. Techniques used for breaking the prisoners resemble the wider tactic to break the Palestinian population as a whole. Regular aerial bombardment, attacking civil infrastructure and killing children, tries to break the legendary resolve that Gazans' residents have shown to oppression, to occupation. Israel creates a feeling of terror and confinement in Gaza, just as it does in its prisons. The tunnels are dark, damp and claustrophobic. Breathing is difficult, but it's the only way for so many to get in or out of Gaza. Everything from shoes to baby's milk, from motorbikes to school desks, they all come through here.
I was arrested in 5th of June 1985. I'm an ex-prisoner. I really want to call it a freedom fighter who was released from the Israeli jails after I have spent there 5,261 days, 5,262 nights away from my family, from my beloved wife, daughters, mother, and all family. As one of the more than 700,000 Palestinians who passed this experience of imprisonment in the Israeli jails, I passed this very special experience in the Israeli jails. Imprisonment in general all over the world means to segregate, to isolate, to take a person away from the community, away from life, away from the stream of life, of the daily life. This is in general. Imprisonment in the Israeli jails has a special taste, has a special condition, has a special experience, because the Israeli authorities, the Israeli governments, they intentionally segregate the Palestinian detainee from the community to destroy the humanity, the soul of this detainee, through very severe systematic process of torture, aiming to bring this detainee to feel regret and to feel sorry about the period of his struggle or her struggle against the occupation.
By sending released prisoners to Gaza rather than their homes in the West Bank, Israel is using Gaza as an extended detention camp. Israel claims that its occupation of Gaza ended in 2004, but this is wordplay, aimed at blinding Western public opinion. Watching the oppression and confinement here, perhaps concentration camp is more fitting.
This struggle against occupation is a very legitimate right of human being to resist occupier. This is secured in all international conventions, in the Universal Declaration, the international community signed and accepted. I only exercised my right, even I call it, it's a duty. It's a duty to resist your country, to resist your people against occupation.
Eretz, The very word makes Gazans shudder, and they don't scare easily. Erez, a kilometre of no man's land, overlooked by army watchtowers. Then you enter their world, a world of aggressive searches and disembodied orders. Imagine a giant city with only one exit to the rest of the world, and even that is restricted. Erez. To get out of Gaza, we take the same route, the Gaza subway, the tunnels. The Egyptian authorities are aware of these tunnels, closing them when under pressure. Even after the uprisings in Egypt, Gaza is still not completely open to the outside world.
Freedom is a very precious thing for every human being. It is very valuable. We cannot evaluate how it is.
This tunnel is even smaller than the tunnel we took when we arrived. And a cable is drawing the rubble constantly, and it shakes the earth beneath our feet. We arrive at the end of the tunnel, still in Rafah, but on the Egyptian side. We breathe again. Yet we also grieve. When will we be able to return? What will happen to those we have met? We have left a prison, but the innocent inmates, men, women, and children, remain behind. At the end of the tunnel was a house, a home, and a light. The light is free to travel across Palestine, but the people we met are not. I wonder, can Wafa reclaim her youth? Will Atta be able to reunite his family? And will the released Palestinian prisoners ever be truly free?
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Students at a London university have remained barred from campus following their participation in two pro-Palestine rallies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, students at a London university are demanding that they be allowed to return to classes after they were suspended following Palestine solidarity action held before and after the October 7th attack. The School of Oriental and African Studies, SOAS, suspended 4 students and 3 alumni recently for violating health and safety protocols following 2 pro-Palestine rallies held on September 29th and October 9th. The students and alumni, some of whom are members of SOAS Palestine Society Committee, took part in 2 rallies, one on September 29th during the Students' Union's Freshers' Fair, and another outside the main entrance to the university on October 9th, shortly after the Zionist regime began bombing Gaza following October 7th. An internal report by the university, seen by the Middle East Eye, alleges that the students moved towards the entrance and attempt to occupy a staircase at one of the rallies. It reports that a fire alarm was activated shortly afterwards. The suspended students have denied their involvement in activating the alarm and told MEE that their suspensions were still in force as of December 2nd, with no timeline given for when they could return to their classes. One of the students told MEE, requesting anonymity, "We started chanting on the steps of the main building, where protests have always happened. In the last 18 months, there has been a real escalation in the way security has responded to student protest. So in this case, they shut all the doors of the building and security officers were filming us on their phones," the student said, adding, "Around 20 minutes in, the fire alarm went off because all the doors were shut. People were unsure of what was going to happen." The student said demonstrators left the building and moved towards a green space away from the main entrance. 3 days later, the participating students were informed that they had violated health and safety procedures and that they would be suspended as a precautionary measure. The alumni were barred from campus without a disciplinary hearing. The student said the allegation was very vague. The university administrator said that the students did not move fast enough when the fire alarm went off. There was a 30-meter gap between the demonstration and the people exiting the building. SOAS has insisted that the suspensions are unrelated to Palestine solidarity activism and that the students breached agreed-upon conditions with management. Members of the Palestine Society, however, say that they were not notified of these conditions until after the rally took place. The Palestine Society said in a statement posted on X, "This is a targeted act of political repression against." A number of the suspended students are committee members of the Palestine Society, with many members who were not present at the rally reportedly being issued with warnings. Another student told MEE, "This includes racialized students, Arab students, and international students on precarious visas. The intention is to silence the Palestine Society at this critical time. We want to get organized, and they are silencing us." According to one student, the academic board asked university administrators to drop the suspensions, but the request was rejected. Some of the students told MEE that they were seeking legal action and suing the university for discrimination under the Equality Act, as they believe they were targeted on the basis of their political beliefs. Despite some small protests continuing on campus, the students reported that the suspensions had a chilling effect on discourse about Palestine, with a lecturer reporting on X that Palestine solidarity posters had been removed from her office door. Those who are confident enough to protest are now barred from campus. Many on campus are scared to do anything in case they get suspended as well, a student said. According to one student elected, officers at SOAS are facing pressure both from the student union, CEO, and the university not to support the suspended students. When contacted for comment, a SOAS spokesperson said, while there is an ongoing investigation into health and safety breaches, the triggering of fire alarms and vandalism on our campus, we cannot comment on the details of the suspensions. According to Truth Out, a pro-Palestine sit-in protest at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, earlier in November sparked a slew of accusations of anti-Semitism and violence from a pro-Israel group, coupled with a concerted effort to permanently ban a student group calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The Coalition Against Apartheid, CAA, at the center of organizing around ending the Zionist regime's occupation of Palestine has become a target. But despite this campaign in an already stifling climate around Palestine activism, with several universities banning pro-Palestine groups, students remain undeterred to continue their advocacy. Safiya Ogundi, president of MIT's CAA, told reporters, there is a strong sense among the organizers within the CAA and within the broader coalition that we will be continuing to push forward and won't be swayed by any of these intimidation tactics that have been levied by the administration. I would honestly say that we are in a really strong position. On November 9th, MIT's CAA helped organize a protest on campus at Lobby 7, the main entrance to the campus. The plan was to stage a 12-hour peaceful sit-in protest. Nothing new for Lobby 7, which was the stage for a Black Lives Matter protest in 2019. The demonstrators plan to build on previous pro-Palestine actions over the past several weeks since the war on Gaza began, including a call for the university to end its MISTI Israel Lockheed Martin Seed Fund. The fund is an initiative that promotes an exchange between faculty and students at MIT and at universities and public research institutions in Israel, including at Lockheed Martin, an American defense contractor. However, the night before the protest was scheduled, organizers received notice that Lobby 7 was no longer a space that could be used to hold demonstrations on campus. Francesca Rico Ackerman, a PhD student at MIT, said, if you're visiting MIT for the first time and you walk in the building, Lobby 7 is where you go. It's a very famous and historic place to hold protest. So for MIT, the night before, to send out communication saying, by the way, you're no longer allowed to protest in Lobby 7, and if you do, you're breaking MIT policy, was a shady move. Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, And this is Palestine Declassified, focusing on investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war